Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Yahweh's Covenant People and my usual guest host, Pastor Bill Fink. And we're going to continue with our series on 2 Corinthians, which has been a whole lot of fun. And we got six more chapters to go, probably two more episodes left. And I'm just going to go right into 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We did finish off chapter 7, correct, last time, Bill?
As you yes, recall? We're at 8-1. We're right at 8-1.
Okay, and right here, there's kind of an archaic translation. Moreover, brethren, we do you to know of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. Now, this sentence construction is really obscure. Did they actually talk this way in the Middle Ages?
Well, yeah, it is obscure. It's really pretty bad all through this. There's a lot of Paul that's bad.
Uh-huh.
If they only had the King James translation to go on, I mean, you have to criticize Paul, but it's not Paul's fault.
Right, of course not.
It's the people that translated him 1,500 years after he wrote it.
Yeah, okay. So in fact, now the note I have here is that it's actually past tense. We have made it known to you. Isn't that a better translation than what they got here? Or what does your translation say?
Well, now we make known to you, brethren.
Yeah, okay.
And it's the present tense. Well, it's actually, I'm looking at it right now, and it's the present tense.
We make known to you,
brethren, the favor of Yahweh, which has been given in the assemblies of Macedonia.
Okay. How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality. Okay, liberality.
This is a deception.
Okay.
And wherever the King James sees the word haplotes, which is simplicity or frankness or singleness,
okay,
but which therefore is sincerity.
Uh-huh.
Okay, whenever they see that word in connection with forking over money, it's liberality.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, and that was a, definitely a deception from the translators. I'm sorry.
Okay. You don't think it's just another archaic expression?
No, because liberality never meant sincerity.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't see it in any writing.
Yeah.
That liberality ever meant sincerity.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Verse 3. For to their power I bear record, and yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. Now, what's this all about here? Because I know.
Well, this is about a collection that Paul took, and I don't know if it was Paul's original idea.
Okay.
Okay. There's no indication. I mean, it may have been, and he definitely.
Right.
If it's not his idea, he adopted it wholeheartedly.
Okay.
There's no doubt. Okay. And this idea. You should see. Okay. He didn't. It's not his original idea. I'm sorry. Acts chapter 15. That the people were, the apostles were asked, as they brought the message to the lost sheep of the children of Israel,
mm-hmm.
they were asked to remember the poor in Jerusalem.
Okay.
And there's a serious, and it's not in the Bible, but it should be so evident to anybody who understands what was going on with the Jews in the first century.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have to be in the Bible.
Right.
That these people in Jerusalem, and it is, you know, it's, in John chapter 21 and 22, in the end of the Gospel of John,
mm-hmm.
we see that the apostles are shutting themselves up.
Okay, right.
Yeah, you know, and barring the door.
Yeah.
And at night. We know that they love to operate at night.
Yeah.
That's their trademark.
Right.
The Bolsheviks went and arrested all the Russian noblemen at night.
Mm-hmm.
That they seized Christ at night in the middle of the night and put him on trial at night. They, you know,
yeah,
Satan
like
loves to operate. Satan operates in darkness.
Uh-huh.
So the
uh-huh.
apostles had themselves, they had themselves pretty much locked in.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, I can't prove it, but I would imagine that these men can't even work or spend a great amount of time out in public for fear of the Edomites.
Right.
And this is during the persecution in the reign of Claudius.
Yeah.
And that's clear from 1 Corinthians chapter 7 that the Christians are being persecuted at this time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, in Jerusalem, I would think that that persecution was you know, at its highest.
Oh, yes, very, very
so,
much
so. Paul is taking a collection for these people, these Christians in Jerusalem from the assembly to the West, and that's
right.
What this this chapter is all about.
Right, okay, so, and we want to make clear for people who haven't been following our discussions on this subject that there is no such thing as a Jewish Christian, because in these days there were primarily two types of people living in the city of Jerusalem, and those were the Edomites. Those are the people that we refer to as Jews, and the Judahites, who we primarily refer to as Judeans. That's the correct translation of the word Judeos. So that we find primarily, and it's not 100% true, but primarily the Edomites were the scribes and Pharisees who were preaching this new religion, which is not Mosaic at all, but it's a pretense of Mosaism. And then we find in the old traditional school of the people of Judah, who were still trying to practice the sacrificial rituals. And so you could say there were Judahite Christians who were converting, Judahites who were converting from the Mosaic tradition to the Christian tradition, okay? But we don't refer to those people as Jews either, because they're not Jews, they're Judahites. And so we make a big distinction between those two categories. And so if you hear us talking about traditionalists, those are the Judahites who are still trying to practice the Mosaic law, and they haven't gotten the message yet. Okay, verse 5. And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Turn the page. And so much that we desired Titus, that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also. Okay, have any idea what Titus's involvement here? Is he the collector of the money, or
there's not really a lot of information on Titus. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know, Titus is not mentioned in the Book of Acts at all.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right, and he's mentioned in passing in Galatians, here in 2 Corinthians throughout this chapter. We'll read his name several times.
Okay.
But he's mentioned in Galatians. He's mentioned in 2 Timothy. And he's mentioned, of course, in the epistle to Titus.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But outside of that, he's not mentioned in you know,
mm-hmm.
the scant historical records and Acts. He's not mentioned at all.
Yes, so his main name is mentioned many times, but don't know much about him. Okay, verse 7, therefore, as you abound in everything, in faith, in utterance, and knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love. Now, here they use the word sincerity, so but it has nothing to do with money. Is that what you're saying? That
the sincerity of the legitimacy of their love.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Is how that should be translated.
Okay.
And they had to take a word that meant legitimacy and translate it sincerity, because
mm-hmm.
they took a word that meant sincerity
okay.
and translated it liberality.
Right. Okay.
I mean.
Okay. So you got if you fix one, you got to fix the other. Right. Okay. I speak not by commandment. What's he saying here? That he's not.
Well, ordered. This isn't you know he's not speaking the word of Yahweh here.
Okay.
He's telling them it's the right thing to do to help these people out.
Right.
But it's not a command of God. It's
exactly.
not scriptural.
Yeah.
It's. Yeah, you know, it goes hand in hand with loving your brother.
Right.
But
right.
I can't tell you to love somebody by giving them $20.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You
sure.
have to volunteer
sure.
to do that.
Yeah, you stingy Israelite.
Well, no. There's just a huge difference between Christian communion
uh-huh.
and between government enforced
absolutely. Yeah.
wealth redistribution, you know?
Exactly.
And Christians
right.
have to avoid that.
Yeah.
At all time, it comes from each man's heart, what he wants to give,
yeah.
who he wants to give it to, and when he wants. You know, that's
right.
up to us. It's the right Christian thing to give our
mm-hmm.
excess away.
Yeah.
But it's not. We're not told that we have to give it to anybody.
Right.
Those tithes, they died in the Old Testament. I'm sorry.
Well, it's a free will offering.
Well, right. And it's a godly thing to give a percentage
yeah.
of you know, of whatever you have
yeah.
away, but...
Yeah.
It's the idea of a fixed tithe. No, that's for
mm-hmm.
that's for the clerical priesthood
right,
that uses that to control men. You know, every facet of the law is disposed of except the tithe.
Okay.
You know, in the clerical priesthood priesthood's eyes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that's just crazy.
Well, and it's certainly obvious that Christian charity is the exact opposite of communism, where your so-called, you know, where the government takes your money and gives it to the people who are supposedly needy, but always winds up in the pockets of the Pharisees, right?
No doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, verse 9. And actually one more thing here, because Paul is often criticized giving his own commandments and starting his own religion. In fact, the Jews are the ones who started that rumor.
Well, right, the Jews do that, but here he's explicitly saying that he's not doing
exactly.
It.
He's explaining himself that, you know, this is not, I'm not speaking. What's the Pope's terminology?
And Paul does this throughout his epistles.
Yes, yeah, he says if it's his opinion, he says so. Right.
Right, and when there's no scripture to govern something, because the scripture doesn't govern every aspect or every possible.
Right.
Happenstance or event that arises in our lives.
That's right.
or choice that we have to make.
That's right.
But there's people learned in the scripture can give good guidance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is all Paul is doing,
is
saying that this is my opinion.
Yeah, so he's giving their advice, and it's up to them to take it or leave it. Right. Okay, well, in fact, that's what he says in verse 10. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you who have begun before not only to do but also to be forward a year ago.
This to you is beneficial. Whoever not only would do, but also to be willing, would have begun before, from last year.
Okay.
In other words, it's, you know, Paul had, this is the second time he visited these people.
Yeah.
And if they had had really been willing, they'd have been saving up, you know, for this gift already is basically what this boils down to.
Yeah, and this is really a bad translation here, but it sounds like he's saying somebody was being, aggressive, you know, in doing something. That's apparently not the case at all, okay? Verse 11, now therefore performing the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will.
So that just as there is a readiness to be willing.
Okay. Right.
You know, in other words, when it comes time to help your brother, you should jump at the opportunity.
Right, right. So that there may be a performance also out of that which you have. This whole eighth chapter is a very archaic language, very difficult to decipher. Verse 12, for if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man has and not according to that he has not. Well, obviously, you can't give what you don't have. You know, but charity comes from the heart. You know, charity comes from the heart, and you give what you can. Verse 13, for I mean not that that other men be eased and you burdened. What does he mean here?
Well, that not in order that there was a relaxation for others. In other words, that they should feel pressure because perhaps they're wealthier than other people.
Okay. So he's not putting pressure on them to be generous, but he's saying they should be generous.
Right, and he's saying, but from equality.
Okay.
And that equality that he's talking about here,
mm-hmm.
That's obviously a proportional equality.
Right.
Because it's only natural that some men are going to be more successful than others.
Right. So.
And therefore, those men that are more successful, that they would have more to contribute to the community.
Right. So by proportion. That now it is your time, this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. Okay, so, and in the old days, when our agriculture was the main product going on in Israel, there was a Mosaic law that governed it, that the owners of the field should leave certain crops on the borders of the field alone so that the poor people could come up and grab some corn and stuff, right? So whoever had abundance was actually, you know, required. It was really obligated to make sure that the poor had something.
Right, absolutely.
That the local poor had something. Verse 15, as it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. So everybody in the community is taken care of. That's the main goal here. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you, for indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went to you. and we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And here, churches, is this again?
It's assemblies, of course. It's ecclesia. Now this brother is unnamed.
Okay.
And it would be, he's probably one of the gentlemen mentioned in Acts 20, verse 4.
Okay.
Okay, there's several gentlemen mentioned in company going to, in connection with Macedonia.
Uh-huh. Okay.
On a mission to Macedonia. So it's probably one of those gentlemen, but we can only guess at which one it may have been, if it's one of them.
Yeah, right.
But the important thing here is that Paul is going to describe that there is a Christian man here who's hand-picked by the assemblies,
as my
translation says at verse 19 here,
okay.
to deliver this gift.
Yeah.
In other words, Paul didn't appoint anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Paul didn't take the money in his own care.
Okay.
And he didn't do that in order to remain above reproach.
Right.
He had the assemblies choose who was going to deliver this gift.
Right.
And they elected somebody to do it.
And this is proving he's not a Jew. Because if he were a Jew, he would have to have that filthy lucre in his hands, right? So he had total control of it. Yes. Okay, so verse 19, and not only that, but who was also chosen of the assembly or the congregation to travel with us this grace which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. So he's not even a middleman in this. He is just he's just commenting on these things, right?
He's not looking for any money. He's looking for these assemblies must have talked about making a donation to those saints or poor, the Christians in Jerusalem who must be under a persecution.
Right. Okay.
If you look at the historical context, this is being done.
Yeah. And obviously here, if our modern churches would take care of poor white children like they take care of, blacks in Nigeria, which is money just thrown down the drain. Yeah. Then our own white community would not be as bad off as it is. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had direct experience with that. That turned me off on a Catholic church by the time I was in 10th grade.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us. Okay, so we are taking good care of this money and distributing it properly, right, as all charities should. Verse 21, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of Yahweh, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you. Our brethren be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches, again, the congregation. Now, it says churches in the plural.
Well, as far as this says to be ambassadors of the assemblies,
okay,
is an honor of the anointed.
Right.
The group. If you're chosen out by your assembly, that's an honor to bestowed upon you by the assembly.
Right. Now, it's assemblies in the plural here. Do you have any? How many assemblies were there here in Corinth? Because Corinth is obviously a big place.
And when you read the opening to 1 Corinthians, it's fully evident that there are probably at least several home-based churches or assemblies of Christians in Corinth.
Yes. And so there was no effort by Paul to try to organize these assemblies into one holy Catholic church.
No, there's no pope in Paul.
Right, I know, yes.
And anybody that thinks there's a pope in Paul is just kidding.
Yeah, right. It's very, very much nitpicking, and it's not there. Yes. Verse 24, wherefore show you to them and before the churches, there's the churches again.
Therefore the proof of your love and of our boasting concerning you is being displayed to them in the presence of the assembly.
In the presence of the assembly. Okay. All right, so that takes care of Chapter 8, chapter 9, verse 1, for as touching the ministering, or in this case, touching would be concerning, or touching on in my own.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's concerning.
For as concerning the ministering to the saints. Okay, now this word saint, because.
I translate it saints.
Yeah.
And some people have a problem with that word, But I don't have a problem with that word, because I think, you know, I really think it came from the early Saxon form of our word to be sanctified.
Okay.
Okay. And saints is just more or less a contraction of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But applied to people as it is, it's the word hagios.
Okay. Okay.
And applied to people, if I wanted to translate it in English, I would have to translate it, which is for the separated people dedicated to the purposes of Yahweh.
Okay. All right.
So I'll just write saints.
Yeah.
I mean, holy ones, a lot of people prefer holy ones, but that word holy is abused by the church also.
Okay.
So I don't really see a distinction.
So
I translated saints, but I have a lot of notes in an appendix to my Paul and Luke translations that explain that this word means
mm-hmm.
those who are separated for the purposes of Yahweh.
Okay.
And that can only mean the children of Israel who accept
right.
the word of Christ.
Right. So it doesn't have any connotation as the churches like to – I got bumped off. I have to get back in here. The churches like to imply that the saints are exceptionally holy people within the congregation. That's not the case. It's just simply referring to because they like to translate this often as hagios also – as righteous, okay?
Well, right, but it can't be. The word hagios in Greek classical literature meant something dedicated on an altar to a god.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it meant, that was dedicated in a temple to that god.
Right, okay.
And separated and set aside for the use of the temple, okay? Which is seen as property belonging to the god.
Yeah,
and all the Greek tribes... anything that was sanctified in a temple, even during time of war, was more or less untouchable.
Yes.
And it was a great sacrilege to mess with stuff dedicated in the temple.
Right, right, yeah.
And the only thing that regulates what a saint is whether or not you came from the loins of Isaac.
Okay.
Because he is the only man in history ever placed on an altar
mm-hmm.
and given over by his father, who is the only one that has rights over him,
right,
to Yahweh at Yahweh's request.
So it's very, the word is actually very similar to the word anointed, in that it's simply talking about Israelites, the citizens of Israel.
Well, absolutely. And, okay. and you know, actually, Esau was also in the loins of Isaac.
Right, right.
But as Paul explains in Romans chapter 9,
mm-hmm.
Esau is the vessel of destruction,
right.
and Jacob is the vessel of mercy.
Yes, okay. So it would it basically count Israelites who are at least trying to obey the law, or simply Israelites per se, without any...
any profession of the gospel and acceptance of Christ,
mm-hmm.
it requires an attempt to, at least an attempt. I mean, all humans are weak, and some are weaker than others.
Sure.
But, I mean, you don't... If you're a man, you don't date a different guy every night and say, oh, I'm weak, oh, I'm weak, you know?
Yeah, right.
or you don't, you know, there's a lot of things we just shouldn't partake in.
Right. Yeah,
you know, and we can't, repentance is required.
I'm going to quit drinking right after this drink.
well, right, exactly. Exactly. We can't laugh at our sin and continue to
right,
sin.
Right.
You know, it's not possible.
But this idea of righteousness, because it's a common thing for the churches to talk about, you know, to mistranslate words and give them a more a churchy meaning, right? Okay, it's kind of what I'm getting at. And right.
They distort all of the
all
of the lexicon. They distort the words in the lexicon to make you believe that they have the authority that they
mm-hmm.
they have a pretense to have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But and distorting the use of the word right, because I've seen this translated as righteous ones, okay, in other places. Wouldn't it be me closer to saying that these are the people who have the right to be, you know, citizens of the assembly, as opposed to righteous ones? We're not talking about obeying
it. If you had to reduce, you know, to translate this word saint without using a church word.
Yes.
Okay. If you had to do it,
yes.
and you couldn't use holy ones or saints,
right.
you would have to use separated ones.
Okay.
Because there's two other words in Greek that clearly mean righteous.
Okay.
And that's dikaios and hosios.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Those two words mean righteous. You can't pervert hagios to be a synonym of them.
Okay.
A hagi, if you had to translate this in common vernacular, you would have to say separated ones.
Okay. And, of course, the Israelites were supposed to stay separate.
And that separation
people.
Is, of course, by Yahweh.
Exactly, exactly. So it means basically separated ones is what we're talking about here.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Verse 2, for I know the forwardness of your mind. Forwardness. Chutzpah.
For I know your readiness.
Readiness. I don't know why it says
forward. Which concerning you I boast of to the Macedonians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, of your mind for which I boast of you. To them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has provoked very many, stirred up very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain on this behalf, that as I said, you may be ready, lest haply if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we say not you.
We would be disgraced.
We would be
And then there's a parenthetical statement which reads, we, in which case I do not say you.
Okay.
In other words, if they're not going to live up to their commitment,
mm-hmm.
Paul saying that he would be disgraced or the other apostles would be disgraced.
Right. Okay. So, so he doesn't want to brag about them and then have them disappoint him, okay?
Right. He's in other words, the Macedonians have been told, hey, the Achaeans, that they've prepared for this.
Right.
They're ready to go.
Okay. So that we should not be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Okay, so, we don't want to brag about you and then have you disappoint us. Verse 5, therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof you had no notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as a matter of covetousness. Okay, so what's he saying here? Who would be covetous here? What's covetous not got to do with
there,
this?
There's no, I don't know how, therefore, I'm going to read 5 from my translation.
Yeah, okay.
Because I just stopped following you halfway through, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, these last few chapters of 2 Corinthians are very archaic language. It's hard to decipher. Yeah, go ahead.
Therefore, I have regarded it necessary to summon the brethren in order that they would go to you in advance.
Okay.
And put in order beforehand your previously announced blessing.
Okay.
This to be ready as a blessing and not just as an advantage.
Okay, okay. So, in other words, this gift that they're presenting should be a true blessing and not something that they brag about.
Not something they're doing
for
their own advantage.
Like Pharisees would be doing. Yeah, okay, verse 6. But this I say, he which sows sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. And we could probably say that is definitely a law of Yahweh.
And he who is sowing by blessings then he shall reap.
Okay, verse 7, every man according as he purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. Now, guess this is the anti-communist creed here, okay? You must give of your own free will, okay? But, you shouldn't feel like you're being compelled to give, okay? And you should just develop a cheerful giving heart, basically, that you shouldn't be able to, you shouldn't be grudgingly give charitably.
Right. Just don't give to the March of Dimes or to the.
Right. Yeah, you shouldn't give to them anyway.
To
right.
UNICEF or.
Or to the Haiti collection.
Yeah. If you want to give something away, drive the streets in your neighborhood and look for a poor white kid or a single white mother with white children hanging off her hips.
Right, right.
And give it to her.
Yeah. In other words, when Yahweh presents the opportunity for you to be of benefit or of help to someone, then you should take advantage of that. But, all of these appeals, for dubious causes you see on TV, just forget that stuff. Most of that stuff is illegitimate and it's the hucksters who do all this stuff. Okay, verse 8, and God. God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. So that if you're charitable to others, then Yahweh will be charitable to you. Verse 9, as it is written, he has dispersed abroad, he has given to the poor, his righteousness remains forever. Now he that ministers seed to the sower, both minister bread for you and food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Okay, so apparently he's talking about, of course, literal food and spiritual food.
I want you going a little fast on it. Verse 8.
Okay.
And able is Yahweh to make abundant every favor for you, in order that in everything at all times, having self-sufficiency.
Having self-sufficiency.
Yes.
Okay.
You may have the advantage in every good deed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they've been blessed with being able to
right.
To make a good living in the land that they live in.
Mm-hmm.
Is what Paul's saying.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Okay. So I went all the way to past 10. Any comments on those two before?
No. 9 is just it's a quote of Psalm 112:9.
Okay. Okay. Very very good. Verse 11. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness.
No, in every way being enriched in all sincerity.
Ah. You know what? In the side here, notes they have liberality again.
Well, of course.
Incredible. All right, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. Now, obviously you're saying that this must be an archaic form of the word generosity. Liberality.
I don't. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's what liberality is, and it has nothing to do with sincerity.
Right.
And the King James. Let me run this down.
Okay.
All right. The word is sincere.
Mm-hmm.
In context, in Matthew 6:22 and Luke 11:34.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's simplicity in Romans 12:8.
Mm-hmm.
And it's singleness in Ephesians 6:5 and Colossians 3:22. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sincerity again at 2 Corinthians 11:3.
Yeah.
In my translation, where the King James has simplicity.
Right.
Okay? But where the subject is economic,
uh-huh.
it's always liberality or bountifully.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay? And at 2 Corinthians 8:2, 9:11, 9:13, it is where the subject, where the word is used
okay.
in relation to economics, in relation to money,
right.
and the church people translated it liberality.
Yes.
But so, everywhere else, they translated it correctly.
So that when you come into one of their churches, you should give liberally.
Well, right. That's the point.
Right.
They're just thieves.
Yeah, right. Okay.
How come they translate the word correctly everywhere else? It's simplicity
right.
or sincerity.
Interesting. Fascinating. Okay, verse 12. For the administration of this service not only supplies the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings to God. Of course, well, you know, collecting charitable contributions is good for the saints, yes, especially for those who are in the need of it, but we don't have to have an organized church to do all this collecting.
No, well, this is what Paul, you know, this is the point of this, is
mm-hmm.
that, yeah, you know, these assemblies agreed. And,
yeah.
and whether it was Paul's idea or not, these assemblies agreed that these people in Jerusalem needed help.
Right.
And that they were going to help them.
Yes. Yes.
And Paul is only he's an expediter of the help.
Right, right.
But he's not taking the money from them. He's making sure that they give
mm-hmm.
what they can afford to give with sincerity.
Yes.
And that they're taking one of their own people.
Mm-hmm.
And having him deliver this gift.
Right, so that he can't be accused falsely if something goes wrong with this money, which could be, you know, in those days, that could easily have happened. Right.
Well, right.
There's robbers and thieves everywhere, yes.
And you don't have a paper trail for money in those days.
Yeah, right. That's right.
There's no
and
check.
And it wasn't paper money either. It was probably gold and silver and such, right.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely coin.
Yeah. Verse 13, while by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection to the gospel of Christ and for your liberal distribution to them. Okay, that's good. Liberal distribution.
Well, it's not liberal. It's sincerity of the partnership.
Okay?
Okay, you don't take a word that means partnership
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And celebrate it and translate it.
Liberal distribution. Wow.
There are Greek words, okay, that mean distribution,
uh-huh.
and this ain't one of them.
Okay.
Okay?
Right.
This is
so,
the, No, it's the same word that, comes from koinonia, I'm sure. I'm going to look at it real quick here.
So it's really obvious that these last two chapters, the King James probably authorized the translators to churchify this language as much as possible to convey the impression that, you know, all of this giving is some stuff that's organized by the church, you know, and, you know, you have to appreciate that the church is doing all this, and it's the church that's responsible for charity and blah, blah, blah. Okay? That's what it sounds like the agenda is here in these last two chapters.
Well, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the agenda.
Okay.
The church, the clerical priesthood is ripping communion out of the community.
Yeah.
Is what's
there
going on.
There you go.
Here.
Very good.
Okay. Because this word part that they translate distribution is koinonia, and it's the same word that means that's translated communion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many other times in the King James.
Okay.
And communion, it really means a sharing of things in common.
Okay.
That's all it means.
That's all.
There's nothing to do with the organized clerical church.
Right.
It's the people, you know, if you and I sit down and have a meal together, that is a communion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every time you sit with your kin and have a meal, or every time you buy
right.
things for your family, that's communion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, yes. Okay, verse 14.
It's the sincerity of the partnership for
mm-hmm.
them and for all.
Okay, very good. Verse 14, and by their prayer for you, which long after you for the exceeding grace of God in you. Okay, which long after you yearn for you. Okay, those who are thinking of you. Verse 15, thanks be to God for his unspeakable gift.
Yeah, indescribable.
Indescribable. Okay. Chapter 10, verse 1. Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am base among you. Okay, I'm humble.
Who concerning stature am humble among you.
Yes, okay, that's better. But being but being absent am bold toward you. Okay, so since he's far away, he can be bold. Verse number two.
Now this verse is going to take a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, let me just read the whole thing through. But I beseech you that I may not be bold when I am present with that confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some which think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. Okay, so who's thinking of us as walking according to the flesh?
Well, yeah, but it's hard to – it's the entire translation is screwed up.
Yeah, okay.
All right. There's you know, all these different forms of different verbs have prefixes and suffixes
mm-hmm.
in Greek. And this is there's an S-A-I suffix on a couple of words here.
Okay.
Okay, sahi. It's sare sahi. And it's from sarseo, which means to be bold, and that's the way it's translated here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's read in the King James Version in the first person.
Okay.
Okay? Twice.
Mm-hmm.
Sare sahi and palme sahi are both read in the first person here.
Okay.
And in the King James Version of the Bible. And that form of the verb never, ever occurs in the first person.
Mm.
They would have a serious problem, the King James,
mm-hmm.
all right? They would have a serious problem trying to explain the way they translated this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that the form of the verb is either in the second person or it's an infinitive.
Okay.
It can be an infinitive in some forms, but it's usually a second-person verb.
Okay.
Okay, in the medium or passive voices. So so the verse 2 should read, but I want not being present, that you would be bold,
mm-hmm. okay.
not Paul,
right?
Because it's a second person
yeah.
verb. It's not a first person yeah. ever in Greek.
So they have this really screwed up.
Yes. But I want, not being present,
yes.
that you would be bold
uh-huh.
with the confidence with which I reckon you should be daring.
Yeah, okay.
That's two second person verbs.
Okay.
Toward certain others who are reckoning us as walking in accordance with the flesh.
Okay.
Other words, you're a Christian. You stand up and defend yourself against these clowns.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right.
Okay. And, of course, that's the Jews
right.
who misrepresent, you know, what the Christians are doing.
So what's this accusation, though, and who's making this accusation that these people might be walking according to the flesh or having...
Well, Paul just says certain others, and there's not... I don't think there's a real clear indication of that.
So who it is.
But, you know, when you read the early Christian writers, and I could cite Tertullian and specific instances of his writing if I didn't have the book upstairs.
Yeah.
That there's many cases where the early Christian writers stated that the Jews were accusing Christians of doing certain things in their assemblies.
Okay.
That we know historically perversions.
Right.
They were perversions that went on in Canaanite and pagan assemblies all the time.
Right, right.
And the Jews were accusing the Christians of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's, you know, from the early Christian writings that is what...
Yeah.
That is what Paul is referring to here.
Right. And that was common practice by the Romans and the Jews to accuse Christians of all kinds of things, to just stir up the public against them, you know, stir up the pagans against the Christians, et cetera, et cetera. Right, right. Verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. Now, what war after? What is war after? What's verse 3 here really saying?
Indeed, walking in the flesh, we do not serve in accordance with the flesh. In other words, while we walk in the body, we don't really care for the needs of the body.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so we rely on Yahweh to provide, and as long as we obey the law and are good to each other in our communities, all things will be provided. That's the way the community is supposed to be set up. Okay, verse 4, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. Okay, so he's definitely denying that they have carnal intent here, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Okay, verse 5, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. So we're doing this for high spiritual and moral purposes. Verse 6, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is for, or punish disobedience. Okay, so Paul is not a pacifist here. He's saying that evil deeds must be punished, right? Verse 7, do you look on things after outward appearance?
No.
Okay. Yes.
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Now this there's no interrogatory particle here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the form of the verb is either indicative, which is sometimes used in a rhetorical question.
Okay.
But usually when it's followed with a subjunctive. And the same form in this part with this particular word, blepo, to see, is the imperative, has the same form.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the King James and the Stephanus manuscripts and you know, the later editors, the editors of the received text, they do mark this as a question.
Okay.
But the NA-27 doesn't mark it as a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I find absolutely no reason to mark this as a question in context.
Okay. Okay.
And I do not mark it as a question. Now, it can be argued that it might be a question, but it's definitely not necessarily a question.
Okay.
Okay, there's no interrogative particle.
Okay.
And the verb can be read in the imperative.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And I translate this verse, you must look at things according to appearance.
Mm-hmm.
If one is confident in himself to be of the anointed, he must reckon this by himself, that just as he is of the anointed, even so are we.
Mm-hmm.
And I will let the context speak for itself.
Okay.
You must look at things according to appearance.
Well, yeah, you have to. You can't be walking around making assumptions about people and about things. Right. Okay, verse 8, for though I should boast somewhat more of our authority, which the Lord has given us for edification, and not for your destruction, I should not be ashamed. Okay, what's this saying? Okay, is it?
Then if perhaps I would boast somewhat more excessively concerning our authority, which the prince has given for building,
okay,
and not for your destruction, I shall not be disgraced.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's saying that, and he's not talking about himself. He's saying they have a collective authority.
Okay.
And if he boasts about it, he won't be disgraced. It won't be left.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, you know, he's not he's talking about our authority as a group,
yeah.
Not his own authority.
Right, but what's destruction got to do? I mean, this word destruction.
They have this authority in Christ not for their destruction.
Okay.
All right, but for their building.
Okay.
He says the principal Lord has given it for building.
Yeah.
And not for your destruction. In other words, you know, a lot of people think that if they adhere to Christianity the way it really should be,
mm-hmm.
that their lives will be damaged by it.
Right.
Well, it might be that the temporal things are damaged a little.
Yeah.
You know, that the government comes after you, that you lose this or that you can't buy the big car you want next year,
right.
or you can't get that big screen TV.
Yes, okay.
But the in the long run, you'll be a lot better off for it.
Right. So
yeah, you know.
Yeah. So their material circumstances won't be hindered by their adherence to the faith.
Well, right. A lot of Christians think that if they truly adhere to the faith, that they're going to be hurt for it and they're afraid to.
Well, yeah, because the surrounding community will hate them.
and
these people were being persecuted. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Verse 9. That I may not seem as if I would terrify you or frighten you by letters, for his letters say they are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Who's he talking about here?
Well, he's talking about himself, and he's imagining what other people say about him.
Oh, okay.
Because evidently Paul wasn't a man of great stature.
Okay.
Okay,
least,
and he's
people.
Making that confession.
Oh,
because the letters.
Oh, size. Is that what
because, right, because oh. The letters, says one, are burdensome and severe.
Mm-hmm.
But the presence of the body weak and the speech nothing. In other words, he's a much greater writer. And you know, he writes letters much weightier than his personal presence.
Okay.
His intellect is greater than his body.
Right, yeah. So he's not an impressive guy like Hitler or who's the actor who played Moses?
Well, Charlton Heston. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's what he's saying basically.
Oh, okay.
That in letter he's very learned and assertive and writes very well and makes very good arguments.
Yeah.
But in person, look at this little squirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I would never get that from this verse the way it's translated. I mean, the context just doesn't reveal that at all.
That's what it's saying. I'm
sorry. But the King James simply does not convey that. It simply does not convey that.
Period. Well, I know, but Keith will never get it.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 11. Let such a one think this, that such as we are in word by letters when we are absent, such will be also indeed when we are present. Well, obviously, we got to do what we walk the walk and talk the talk. Right?
Right.
Yes. Verse 12, for we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves.
We do not venture or rank. I'm sorry. We do not venture to rank or compare ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
With any of those recommending themselves.
Okay.
In other words, Paul's not saying, hey, I'm the guy.
He's trying to be modest here.
He's trying to be modest, but he's not saying, oh, I'm the guy you got to listen to, because he's just putting it out there and the truth will show for itself.
Okay. So this verse, again, contradicts the people saying he was trying to elevate himself over Jesus Christ.
He humbles himself constantly.
And, of course, this is a major falsification of Paul's ministry, that he, you know, the idea that he himself, he was trying to start a new religion, which is very popular, you know, in certain circles. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That there's there's a couple of verses here and there where it seems like he's exalting himself, but really there's nothing to back that up in any of his writings, really.
No, absolutely not. When you examine Paul's writings, he's an extremely a man of extreme humility.
Right, right, okay. And then also, was he also talking about his speech, et cetera? Was he at this time, was he in prison in Rome at this time? Because he had several ailments. He had one of his eyes was bad.
No, he's not in prison yet when he writes.
He's not in prison yet, okay.
No, this is some years before he ends up in prison.
Okay. Okay, verse 13, but we will not boast of things without our measure, but according to the measure of the rule which God has distributed to us, a measure to reach even to you. 14, for we stretch not ourselves beyond our measure, as though we reached not to you. What is this saying? this again, more archaic.
For not as if reaching to you do we extend ourselves. Indeed, as far as you, we also came before with the good message of the anointed.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about, he's comparing this to physically overextending himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. And it's a difficult concept to grasp, but basically that's the stretch he's making.
Yeah, and the King James is not expressing it well.
I'll read from 13. Now, we will not boast in regard to things without measure, but according to the measure of the standard of which Yahweh has of measure distributed to us.
Okay.
To reach even as far as you.
Okay.
In other words, he's using like a spiritual measurement.
Mm-hmm.
He's describing a spiritual measurement and making an analogy of the physical distance.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For not as if reaching to you do we overextend ourselves.
Okay.
Indeed, as far as you, we also came before with the good message of the anointed.
Okay. All right. So verse 15, not boasting of things without our measure, that is, of other men's labors, but having hope when your faith is increased that we shall be enlarged by you according to our rule. Our rule? Abundantly?
Our standard for abundance.
Our standard for abundance.
With you to be magnified in accordance with our standard for abundance.
Yeah, a very different concept being conveyed here by the King James again. Verse 16, to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you and not to boast in any other man's line of things made ready to our hand.
Not ready to boast by another standard for things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have one standard. We're not going to deviate from it. But he that glories, let him glory in Yahweh. Okay, very good.
Yeah. And that's a quote of 1 Kings 2:10.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 1 Samuel 2:10.
Okay.
It's actually from the Septuagint, not from the AV. That's why the confusion.
Right.
Because, you know, 1 Samuel is 1 Kings in the Septuagint.
Oh, okay. I see. Verse 18, for not that he commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. Okay, so, yeah, and if anyone is given to self-flattery, he's not a Christian. Okay.
Well, it's a vain thing, self-flattery.
Yes.
And it's the Jews are the greatest self-promoters.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they're so successful. Because the
in
sheep
this world,
fall,
yes.
But when the wolf stands in the middle of a sheepfold and tells the sheep how great he is, that the sheep all believe it.
Yeah, right.
And three sheep a night disappear until they wake up.
Well, this is a concept that's really so hard to grasp, but it's not taught by the churches today either, that our prosperity, we're supposed to seek our prosperity as a group. We're not supposed to seek our prosperity individually like the Jews do.
Well, the whole sense of, you know, I Sword Brethren and I went over this on a Sunday night thing back when we were talking about Germany and the Jewish problem.
Okay.
The sense of egotistical stardom.
Yes.
Comes straight from the Jews.
Okay.
And they have shoved that down our throats.
Right.
That this sense, you know, we should all be stars. Everybody wants to be a star.
Mm-hmm.
When everybody wants to be the star, well your brethren go down the
right.
toilet.
Yeah, and you step on them to be a star.
they destroy our group identity and our love for our brother.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So we see our society has been Judaized by this material success, okay? And also we're talking about rank, you know, social status, which is very another, you know, Jewish thing.
Absolutely.
They loved Christ criticized the Pharisees exactly for that. Okay. All right. Chapter 11, verse 1. Would to God you could bear with me a little in my folly or foolishness, and indeed bear with me, for I am jealous over you with godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Okay, any comment on this chaste virgin?
Well, he's using that same analogy that Christ is Yahweh, the husband who would marry Israel.
Okay.
And he, through the gospel, it is, you know, when you bring the gospel to somebody, you have, basically, you have remarried a portion of Israel to Yahweh.
Okay, but this concept of the chaste virgin being, is this strictly, moral, or is this chaste virgin language talking about purity of race?
Well, you know, is probably talking about both. Okay. I mean, we will see in some of Paul's later epistles where there's many mistranslations where he definitely is talking about purity of race.
Okay.
But here, you know, when you put off all the analogy is that when you put off all sin and accept the gospel message,
mm-hmm.
you become that chaste
all
virgin
right,
okay. again in your relationship to God.
Right. Okay, so it's not enough to be just a white Israelite. You have to follow the gospel, the teaching of the gospel. So, okay.
Well, right, and if you don't, then it's all in vain.
It's in vain, yes. Verse 3 there. But I fear, lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve, okay, beguiled. What does this word beguiled mean here in the Greek?
Well, it means to be seduced or deceived, and you can take it either way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, this is actually says thoroughly beguiled. It's the word is magnified by a prefix.
Okay, thoroughly.
It's not just apatao, which apatao would be to beguile,
mm-hmm.
but this is ex apatao, which is it kind of means that something came from that something resulted from that seduction.
Okay, so
you know, and I have thoroughly beguiled, and because I didn't think that I had to. I could have translated this thoroughly seduced,
mm-hmm.
you know, but to prove too senile, I didn't think I had to do that. And
right.
I left it thoroughly beguiled.
Right,
but it's definitely talking about Eve having been deceived and something resulting from it.
Mm-hmm. Through the subtlety of the serpent, yes. So your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. So again,
now, that's that word sincerity that they translated liberality a couple
right.
of chapters ago. Oh,
okay. All right. So this time they translated it nicely.
Well, it has nothing to do with money.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 4. For if he that comes preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit, which you have not received, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him. Now, of course, let's reflect upon the times here.
I read this as a rhetorical question.
Okay.
For if indeed one coming proclaims another Yahshua whom we did not proclaim, or you admit a different spirit which you have not received,
yeah.
or a different good message or gospel
yeah.
which you had not accepted, would you hold up well?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In other words, would you be able to withstand being deceived
right.
by like one of those Ephraim Scepter clowns?
Right, right. Well, now, since these people did not have a whole lot of literature to get their hands on and use as, you know, except for the Old Testament law. That's
right.
That's all they had. You know, they certainly didn't have a lot of written documents from Paul or from, you know, the other apostles. You know, that kind of stuff might have been floating around.
Well, this is their third letter from Paul.
Okay.
They might have pieces of the gospel. They might have Luke's gospel.
Right, right.
Because Luke's gospel was with Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And it's possible they had Luke's gospel.
Yeah.
And they may, you know, the community may have had a copy of the Old Testament scriptures.
Yes, okay.
And that's likely.
Yes.
That they had a copy
right,
of the Old
right.
Testament scripture.
So then he's talking, you know, the only thing they would really have is a copy of the, you know, Old Testament. And so that would be the basis of their faith, okay? But he's been explaining to most of these of the circumcision that the sacrifice on the cross got rid of the temple sacrifices, and those no longer apply. Of course, this Second Corinthians isn't talking about that. But it's very clear that these are the only types of records that could have possibly had is the Old Testament. What, you know, so he can't be talking about some new gospel, new written gospel in any kind of form. He just can't possibly be talking about that.
Well, absolutely. It's been right here. It's been at least, I think if I recall correctly, it's about 54 or 55, maybe.
Okay. So,
and it's been 25 years.
So 22 years, right?
Or yeah, maybe a little less than 25.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that Luke's gospel is written down and
okay.
and Matthew's gospel is written
right.
down.
Right.
Mark's. I believe that Mark's gospel is Peter's gospel.
Okay.
And that probably wasn't written down until at least this time.
Okay.
And that was probably written down in Babylon where Peter said that he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. John's gospel, from all accounts, wasn't written until much later.
Okay.
until maybe even after 70 AD.
Okay. All right. So that certainly wouldn't have been circulating at this time.
No.
So aside from possibly having two or three of the gospel accounts in their possession, all they would have had is the Old Testament.
Yes.
That's all they could have possibly had. Right.
And there's no proof they had all the gospel. You know, that
right.
they actually had
yeah.
copies of the gospel.
Right, right. So there's no way that in the common accusation against Paul that he's preaching a new gospel. Well, then on what basis? You know, he's obviously not contradicting anything, you know, in the gospels himself. But what we run across is that the translations make it appear that he says that the law has been abolished when in fact it hasn't. Okay.
Well, it's clear to me
mm-hmm.
that Luke's gospel is what Paul refers to when he says my gospel.
Okay.
Okay. That Luke actually collected and compiled
uh-huh.
it.
Okay.
But that was, you know, Luke was Paul's travel partner quite
mm-hmm.
often.
Yeah.
They were together quite often in the accounts and Acts. And Luke was with Paul in Rome. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So Luke would have been writing his gospel and making his record
right.
during all this time.
Okay.
So when Paul says my gospel, he means the gospel that Luke recorded,
okay.
because that would have been the gospel that Paul knew.
Because that expression is often termed by the Paul worshipers, okay, actually even by the Paul bashers too, as meaning my new doctrine.
When you're a Christian, you adopt that gospel. It's your
yeah.
gospel.
So his,
Isaiah said, Yahweh, who will right. believe our report?
Right, right, right. So my gospel is simply referring to this written document, not my new doctrine.
Right.
Okay.
My gospel is the gospel that's coming out of my mouth.
Right.
And if it happens to be Luke's or John's, well,
yes.
of course I'm going to credit them.
Right.
And of course I'm going to credit Christ.
Right.
And Paul said in 1,000 places, well, maybe not, it's the gospel of Yahshua Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's what his gospel was.
Right. Right.
And there was only one gospel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when
yeah.
he says my gospel, well, Isaiah called it our report.
He was just referring to his own writings and not suggesting that he has come up with a new gospel of his own. Right,
right. Absolutely. That's ridiculous,
yes.
and it's a false accusation.
Right. Okay, verse 5. For I suppose I was not a whit behind the very chiefest apostles. Now, here's another statement that he's bragging on himself again, okay, that not a whit behind the very chiefest apostles. So what?
For I reckon it nothing to have been inferior to those most eminent ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's calling them most eminent, but he's not
yeah.
saying that they're, you know, that he's any worse off than they are, that
right.
he did any less than they did.
Yeah, very good. Verse 6.
Yeah, you know, it's actually
yeah.
it sounds like a boastful statement, but it's not a boastful statement. It's
mm-hmm.
it's actually. It's almost a humble statement.
Right. Well, yeah, because he's more than any other apostle has spread the gospel to the white Greco-Roman world, the Israelite world. Yeah.
Well, they all want to knock Paul. If you take Paul out of Christianity and you can't, there's no identity. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
There's no identity. You take Paul out of Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly Luke. And then, you know, the more closely.
Well, with no Paul, there is no Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no Acts.
Okay.
Or maybe there's only 5 or 6 or 7 chapters. Or 8 chapters. What? 8 chapters.
Okay.
Right. Right through the stoning of Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Acts might end, if it exists at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And Paul is the glue that stuck the
right.
gospel
yeah.
to the white nations of Europe.
Yeah.
Who were the intended lost sheep.
Right. Exactly. And the false idea. And this is not Paul's fault again, but this false idea that he was the apostle to the Gentiles, with falsely accusing him of being, you know, the apostle to non-whites. That's a false translation and false usage of the word Gentiles.
Well,
okay.
well, right. Paul
yes.
defines what the Gentiles were in Romans chapter 4.
Okay.
They were the nations that descended from Abraham.
Uh-huh.
That
uh-huh.
Paul makes that, he defines the faith of Abraham in
yeah.
Romans chapter 4.
Right, right.
By saying that that Abraham believed that many nations would come out of
right,
his
right.
loins.
Yes.
And Paul took the gospel, as he states,
mm-hmm.
to those nations.
Right, right.
Now, we in identity, we study our theology and history, And we find out that the nations which descended from the ancient Israelites of the Old Testament are the same nations Paul went to.
Right.
Who the hell can fault Paul?
Right.
He did exactly what we claimed he was supposed to do.
But the entire evangelical world, and that includes the Catholic Church, by the false use of the word Gentile, claims that Paul meant he's going to non-Israelites. Okay? And the Paul bashers have simply swallowed that interpretation, that false translation, as if it were accurate, and then uses it to pass Paul.
All clowns.
Right. Okay.
They are all clowns.
Right. Yeah. Right.
None of them know what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, because they believe that these false translations and false ideas that the churches have made out of Paul's writings. Very good. Okay, verse 6. But though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge, rude being what, primitive? Is that what he really means here?
I'm sorry, what are you on?
Verse 6. 11,
and 6. Even if unpracticed, it's a literal word. Word means unpracticed.
Unpracticed. So primitive.
He's saying that, you know, he's not the greatest orator.
Okay, yeah.
Which, that's a humble statement.
Yes.
Because we see in the book of Acts, wherever he had to address a crowd, he held his own by far.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. But though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge, but we have been thoroughly made manifest among you in all things. Okay.
And that's why certain Paul bashers, they make fun of my speech.
I'm
rude in speech,
with the New York accent, right. Verse 7, have I committed an offense in abasing myself that you might be exalted because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely? What's he implying here? Have I committed? Why would he think that they think he's committed an offense?
Well, we're reading verse 7. Can it be that I have made an error?
Okay.
Humbling myself in order that you may be elevated because I have announced the good message of Yahweh to you freely.
Okay.
That there's, you know, there's something in Greek culture that we miss, and it's really, I didn't achieve it.
Okay.
It's really difficult to achieve. We're just missing it from our culture.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know how, and we're not really, but we miss it in the language here.
Mm-hmm.
You know how somebody brings you something, like a postman brings you a good letter.
Right.
And you leave him a tip.
Yeah, okay.
Well, in Greek culture, a messenger who delivered a good message expected a reward.
Okay.
Okay, and if I crossed the plains of Marathon to announce something to your household, I would expect a couple of a couple of coins. You know what I mean?
Because he went to a lot of trouble to deliver the message. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
And.
Okay.
Here, Paul's saying that he delivered it. He wouldn't take money from the Corinthians.
Okay.
And he admits in another letter, it might be here, it might be somewhere else,
right. Okay.
That he
okay.
did get money. You know, the Macedonians had helped him out
right.
personally.
Okay. So in other words,
he said that he defrauded the Macedonians to deliver the good message. That's how he described it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how humble he is.
Yeah. Okay.
You know that because the Macedonians gave Paul some money or helped Paul, you know, financially.
Yeah.
He said that he defrauded the Macedonians to deliver the gospel to the Corinthians.
Yeah.
Is basically the gist of what he said.
Okay, so what's really going on here is,
in fact, this is actually where he says it, I think.
Okay.
And what's going on here is that he announced the good message to the Corinthians freely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's saying, could that have been a mistake? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
Humbling himself like that. In other words, he could have taken something from them
in
exchange for the gospel. So you know what I mean?
Yeah, so every one of us has had an experience where somebody wanted to give us a present and you didn't want to take the present, but he insisted you take the present. And I said, no, I'm doing it. No. And, you know, so this is what's going on here is that, you know, he just didn't want to take the present. He didn't feel like worthy.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for us to understand because we don't have that cultural.
Right. Yeah. We don't have that kind of gentlemanly discussion too often these days. Right. Verse 8. Okay. I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service.
Now, this is what I was talking about. You know, I have it all in my head,
yeah.
but I don't I don't always know where it is.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where he's saying that he deprived other assemblies.
Okay.
In other words, the Macedonians looked, you know, gave him money, fed him, whatever, looked
mm-hmm.
out for him economically.
Okay, okay.
And he didn't go spend more time with them explaining the scriptures.
Yeah, right.
He deprived them by taking that money from them at their kindness
mm-hmm.
and going to Corinth to explain the scriptures.
Right, right. Yeah, so and that's how he robbed them. Okay, very good. Verse 9, and when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man for that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied, and in all things I have kept myself from being burdensome to you, so will I keep myself. So, and that's admirable to, you know, not want to be a burden to people. But,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the example he set.
Okay.
Where the Catholic Church went and said exactly the opposite.
Right.
They imposed on everybody.
Exactly, exactly. You must come to church and you must put coins
and
in the shekels.
I don't see how he could possibly blame Paul for the Catholic Church.
Right, right.
Because he would impose on nobody
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and states it explicitly.
Yes.
And they impose on everybody.
Right. Very good. Verse 10. As the truth of Christ is in me, no man shall stop me of this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Wherefore? Because...
Now, Corinth, you know, the Peloponnese, that's called Achaia.
Okay. Achaia.
And that Corinth is one of the largest cities in Achaia, or
okay.
on the Peloponnese.
Okay. Wherefore, because I love you not, God knows. What's he saying here?
For what purpose? Because I do not love you, Yahweh knows. In other words, Yahweh knows he loves.
Okay, right. Okay, verse 12. But what I do, that I will do, and that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion, that wherein they glory, they may be found even as we. What's he saying here? This is, again, very... abstruse language.
It's very rhetorical.
Yeah.
All right. The truth of Christ is in me, for that this reason to boast shall not be contained in me within the regions of Achaia. In other words, he has to state it. All right.
Okay. He has to state it.
For what purpose? Because I do not love you, Yahweh knows. In other words, of course
yeah.
he loves them.
Right.
But that which I do, and I will do, in order that I cut off the pretext.
Mm-hmm.
Of those desiring a pretext at which in that they may boast in that they would be found just as we. In other words, that there are other, you know, the false apostles
mm-hmm.
who are exacting money from people that they come to,
right.
that they try to preach to.
Yes.
And Paul's saying that he cuts off their pretexts.
Okay.
That they don't have that boast.
Yes. Okay, very good. Verse 14, and no marvel... For Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light.
Okay. Well, you missed verse 13.
Oh, I did? Okay.
Yes.
For such are false apostles and deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. So this is the warning that, you know, that those churches, and I mean churches according to the clerical, you know, organized church concept, they will be transformed into
right.
They are,
Paul's
yeah.
not the first Catholic.
Right.
Paul's warning us about the Catholic.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what this is.
And okay. It's an absolute slander to call Paul a Catholic. And it's a false accusation, and it's a blasphemy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. And of course, he's talking about the Jews here too, because they finance false teachings and false churches as well. And that's how Satan himself transforms, makes himself appear to be good. Everybody thinks that the Jews are God's chosen people, right? They have transformed themselves into an angel of light.
Well, all you have to do to see that is turn on a television.
Right. Yeah, they're all constantly boasting of themselves. Exactly. And so is the Catholic Church. And
they claim to be espousing good things and promoting good, and,
right.
and it's all evil.
Right, yeah. They're harboring illegal aliens in the Catholic Churches here, right? That's good, isn't it? Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. They're boasting of their evil deeds, pretending that they're good deeds.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They fulfill Isaiah.
Yes.
Both of them who call good evil and evil good.
Exactly, exactly. Verse 15, therefore it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their work. So they're going to get theirs in any case. Right?
Yes, they will.
Yes, verse 16, I say then, again, let no man think me a fool, if otherwise yet as a fool receive me, that I may boast myself a little. What does he mean here, that I may boast myself a little?
Okay, well, he asked them to let, you know, at the beginning of this is all highly rhetorical, and
mm-hmm.
at the beginning of this, he said, please bear with me in a little folly.
Oh, okay.
Because some of the allegories he made, you know, may have sounded ridiculous to them.
Okay.
But he's saying,
yeah.
you know, that no one should suppose me to be a fool just because he engaged them in
yeah.
some of these silly allegories.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and this whole, these three chapters, actually we're in the fourth chapter, all of these chapters are highly rhetorical and highly psychological. It's very psychological what he's talking about here. And, he's talking about deceivers, and but he's also talking about the sincerity of the true Christian, okay, and not to engage in that stuff that the Jews do and as we know, that the Catholic Church is doing.
Well, absolutely.
We have to understand what they're doing and how they're going about it. Otherwise, we can't comprehend what he's even talking about here, okay? Verse 17, that which I speak it not after the Lord, but as it were foolishly in this confidence of boasting. Okay,
here we have the confusion of the enchurioi, which is the adjective
mm-hmm.
with authority.
Okay.
That which I speak, I do not speak with authority.
Okay.
In other words, there's no scriptural authority for some of the things he said here.
Yeah, okay.
He said that they were his opinion.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
But as if in folly. In other words, anything that's not based on scripture is in folly anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
In this substance of that reason to boast. In other words, his saying that... Yeah, you know, that he brought the gospel to the Corinthians and never
yeah.
took anything from them.
Okay.
Basically, and brought Christianity to them and helped found those assemblies in Corinth. And he spent considerable time in Corinth.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And if we read the gospel,
right.
I mean, he may have been there a year. It was not as long as he was in Ephesus. He was in Ephesus for 2 years at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But he spent a considerable time period in Corinth preaching the gospel and doing a lot of the yeoman's work to establish...
Yeah.
These assemblies in Corinth.
Yes, certainly, certainly. Now, but in this translation here, verse 17, it says, I speak it not after the Lord.
No, I speak not with authority.
Yeah, where did they come up with the word Lord?
Because every time they see curios,
okay.
even when it doesn't have an article,
okay.
even when it's not a substantive, they insist on translating it Lord.
Ah, yeah, because where'd they get the word Lord from out of this?
Right, but it's not a substantive. It's not a noun here.
Okay.
That which I speak, I do not speak with authority,
uh-huh.
is what Paul's saying.
Fascinating.
And Paul considers authority to be the scripture.
Uh-huh.
But the scripture doesn't, yeah, you know, it's the Old Testament, especially in the shape it was handed down, is not the ultimate, yeah, you know, guiding regulation to every single facet of our life. There are some things that are left
right.
unaddressed in the scripture,
well,
and we have to depend on our own spirit to tell us whether or not that's right or wrong.
Right, and our own sincerity. It's the perfect law of liberty in the book of James, yes.
Well, right,
mm-hmm.
and the Talmud exists to take advantage of the
right.
the things in the scripture which aren't exactly spelled out
right.
to a T.
And that explains the major difference between Judaism and Christianity, is that Judaism deems to regulate every facet of your life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, which is communism.
And then on the other side, they everything that's sexual and perverted, they've written a Mishnah to get around the law.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's all bogus. It's all bogus. Verse 18, seeing that many glory after the flesh, I will glory also. Now, again, this doesn't follow. Seeing that
this is the folly he's engaging with.
Okay.
Since many may boast in accordance with the flesh, then for my part I will boast.
Oh.
His whole point here is that he's telling the Corinthians, hey, I brought you the gospel,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't take anything from
okay.
you. In other words, you benefited from me for free,
yes.
gratis, and I'm going to boast about that.
Okay.
That's the folly that he's talking about.
I see. Very good. Verse 19, for you suffer fools gladly, as we all do. Seeing you yourselves are wise. Now, is he being tongue-in-cheek here?
But he's saying, for you being prudent, gladly bear with those being fools.
Okay, all right, very good.
Well, we put up a troublemaker, don't we?
Yeah, right.
There you go. This verse describes it.
Yeah, we're so humble. Verse 20.
Oh, I'm anything but humble. I admit that.
Verse 20. For you endure, if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, if a man take of you, if a man exalt himself, if a man smite you on the face. Isn't this an extension of where Yahshua Messiah is talking about how many times should you allow one of your brethren to...
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's talking, you know, if your brother smites you on the cheek,
turn the other cheek. Yes.
But, you know, if an Edomite or a Negro or a Chinaman smites you on the cheek, you better not turn the other cheek.
Right, it's a totally different story then, exactly, because they're not of our race and they're not our brethren and the law doesn't apply to them. Right, very, very good. Verse 21, I speak as concerning reproach as though we had been weak. However, wherein soever any is bold, I speak foolishly, I am bold. This is just... It's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense here. What's verse 21 saying here? What's the Greek really saying?
I speak concerning dishonor as though we had been weak, but with this should anyone be daring. In folly I speak, I am also daring.
Okay.
Are they Hebrews? I am also. Are they Israelites? I am also. Are they the offspring of Abraham? I am also.
Okay. Okay.
Are they servants of Christ? I speak wandering from reason. I am even more. In other words, that's a little boast after the flesh.
Okay, very good.
Saying.
Okay. So, number one, he's affirming that he is an Israelite, okay, and that these Corinthians, is he talking about the Corinthians here? Are they the seed of Abraham? Are they Israelites? Are they Hebrews? Is he referring to the Corinthians, or... Is he referring to somebody else?
He's referring to himself.
Oh, okay.
He's referring to the, there must be whoever the false apostles are.
Okay.
Are claiming to be Israelites.
Okay. So he's
addressing these false apostles.
Uh-huh.
That
okay.
We don't really know who they are.
Right.
But
right.
Somebody's trying to preach an alternative gospel to
uh-huh.
the,
So whoever these false apostles are they Hebrews? Well, I am. Are they Israelites? Well, I am. Okay, so he's saying, well, I'm an Israelite, listen to me. Okay, isn't that what he's saying here? Isn't that what the context of the boast is?
Excuse me?
The fact that he isn't an Israelite, he has a right to speak.
Well, yes,
for
right.
Israelites.
Right,
okay. Yes.
And whether they are or not, he is too.
Yes, okay, very good. Verse 23, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more, in labors more abundant, and in stripes above measure, which he means literally, right? Because he actually had the whip, had to subject himself to, he was subjected to the whip. In prisons more frequent, in deaths often. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, saved one. Okay, so he himself endured 5 whippings, okay? Verse 25, thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck, a night and a day I have been in the deep. Okay, what does he mean, a night and a day?
Well, a night and a day, it basically means that he was wrecked at sea.
Okay.
You know, that he was
okay.
in the water,
okay.
in the sea.
Right, so floating around in the ocean or in the Mediterranean Sea. Okay,
right. And I don't, you know, there's not a, I don't know if Acts chapter 27, the shipwreck in Acts chapter 27 accounts for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, the Acts is very incomplete.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, so verse 26, in journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, so he's just counting the things that he's been going through, in perils by my own countrymen, yeah, we go through that too, don't we? In perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, the wilderness, the sea, false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, and fastings often. And so in other words, he's boasting here of all the things he's had to endure.
Absolutely.
In bringing the faith to Israel.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. Verse 28, beside those things that are outside, that which comes upon me daily, the care of all the, here's that word, churches again,
apart from the external things hindering me daily, is the care of all the assemblies.
Right.
In other words, he's gone around he founded a lot of these assemblies, and a lot of them he didn't found, he still visited.
Right.
Or like the Romans, he wished to visit. He ended up visiting them in chains.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that during the fledgling age of Christianity,
okay, right,
that was the role of an apostle.
Right.
Now, after, he didn't rule over the assemblies, and he said that repeatedly.
Yes.
After the fledgling age of Christianity,
uh-huh,
when the gospel had been spread, there was no need any longer for anybody to do such a thing. That Paul told explicitly the members of the assemblies when he met them in Ephesus before he returned to Jerusalem, where he would be arrested and never be free again,
mm-hmm,
at least as far as we know from the scripture, that they were on their own. He,
mm-hmm,
he left the care of the assemblies with the supervisors or bishops,
yes, yes,
of the independent assemblies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's no, there's no vision of a pope in Paul's letters.
Uh huh. Yeah. Right.
But after the apostolic age, the assemblies are on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's no doubt.
Yes. Very good. Now, verse 29. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is offended and I burn not? What is he saying here? Who is weak and I am not weak?
Well, he's saying that he's just as weak as everybody else.
Okay.
Even though he had been through all of this, I mean, the flesh is weak and none of us are special.
Yes. Very good. Verse 30. If I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern my infirmities. Okay. The God.
Now let me say that 29. Who is weak and I am not weak? And the next clause says, one is entrapped and I am not inflamed.
Uh-huh.
In other words, when you see somebody spreading false doctrine,
okay,
it's natural to be inflamed.
Of course.
It's natural to be angry.
Yes, yes, as you demonstrate on these shows. Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, and the fact is, the average Christian today is utterly passive.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm not a mamby-pamby little church
right,
little church boy.
Yeah, so
it's
So what he's saying here is he's being critical of this passive church that we have today that doesn't want to offend anybody because we're not supposed to criticize.
Well, absolutely.
So he's preaching against that.
Absolutely.
Very
and
good.
And long ago I was asked, because of my aggressiveness, some little twerp asked me, if I was a good Christian, why am I so aggressive?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he ever walked through a sheepfold.
Mm-hmm.
And he said no. And I said, well, you try it, because every few sheep you're going to meet a ram.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Let me go back to 30. If I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern my infirmities. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which is blessed forevermore, knows that I lie not. Okay, I'm definitely not lying about these. It may sound like I'm bragging, but I'm not lying. Verse 32, in Damascus, the governor under Aretas, the king, kept the city of Damascus?
The city of the Damascenes, the people of Damascus.
Yeah, the Damascenes, with a garrison, desirous to apprehend me. And through a window in a basket was I let down by a wall and escaped his hand. So he's just going through all of the rough times that he's had trying to spread the gospel. And indeed.
Well, right. And that account is clear in Acts.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an account in Acts where they were watching the gates of the city to see if Paul would try to leave the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And they let him out through a window.
Yeah.
And that's when we covered Acts, I had explained, and
right,
as an archaeological note, that some of the buildings were built into the walls of the city,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
had windows that actually looked to the outside of the city.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, there probably weren't too many of those. Yeah, so here Paul is clearly letting off steam about the false critics and accusations about him, and he's saying, gee, all the things I've gone through to spread this gospel, and people still hate me.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And we in Identity are experiencing the same thing. All we're trying to do is bring the truth to the world, especially to the Christian world, the white Christian world, and all we get is false accusations. You know, so we're in the same boat. We're exactly in the same boat. Okay, so that leaves chapters 12 and 13, and I think if since Galatians follows right behind, it's not going to take us very long next Saturday to go through chapters 12 and 13. So let's just plan on going into Galatians next Saturday, okay?
Well, Galatians, we could do the historical introduction.
We probably could do a lot of that. Okay.
Well, we need a historical introduction for Galatians, and that's because a lot of people, even in identity, that there's a false idea that's pretty old that Paul's letter to the Galatians was really to the Gauls of France.
Uh-huh.
And that's just false. There's no basis for it, whatever. Now, the Galatians and the Gauls of France were related. They were the same, different tribes of the same people. They shared tribal names with the Gauls in France. They shared language with the Gauls in France.
Yeah.
The Galatians are definitely Celts, but they're not in France.
Uh-huh.
There's a clear historical record,
in
the New Testament and in the historians, that this large colony of Celts dwelt in Anatolia called Galatahi, and the district they lived in became known as Galatia.
Okay, very good.
Long after the Roman, Galatahi was the name that the Greeks applied to all of the Germanic tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the ones in Europe they called Galatahi, and that name probably appears in the 4th century in literature.
Right, right.
But before that, they were all called Scythians.
Uh-huh, yes.
Now, the Galatahi, the Romans called Gauls. And it's the Romans that made a distinction between Germans and Gauls that the Greeks never had.
I see.
But the people of France would have been called by the Greeks early on, they also would have been called Galatahi.
Right, yeah. And what about Gael? Is that a... what's the linguistic connection between Galatians and Gaels? Was there any, or is that...
Well, I don't think so, because I don't think there's a connection. It's possible that, it's not explained where the word Galatahi came from, except by fancy.
Okay.
Because Herodotus, Homer and a lot of the early poets kind of derided the Scythians for being drinkers of milk.
Oh, okay.
Specifically mare's milk.
Yes.
Yeah, they derided the Scythians for being drinkers of mare's milk or horse's milk.
Okay.
Now, it's possible that somehow they called themselves Gael.
Okay.
But it seems that maybe, perhaps, it came from that Greek word for milk, which is the word that we use it in a couple of scientific words in our language, but it's basically Galatas, or that G-A-L-A word refers to milk.
Ah, I see.
And that it may have come from that, but that's kind of fanciful.
Right.
And it can't be ascertained.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Because we don't have, we have a lot of literature from the Greeks from the 5th and 6th centuries and 4th centuries, but we don't have enough to determine a full etymology for all the Greek words. You know what I mean?
So
whether or not Galatahi really came from the word for milk or not may never be determined.
Right.
But if it came from the word Gael that the Celts already called themselves by, then I would say that Gael and Galatahi are definitely related words.
Right, right. And, of course, Galilee, Gilead, originate in ancient Israel.
Galilee actually means a circuit, a circle or a circuit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Referring to a circuit around the Sea of Galilee?
Well, that's very possible.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay, so... I think the thrust of what I've gotten out of today's message is the abstruse nature of the King James language in the book of 2 Corinthians, especially in these latter chapters. it's like wading through muck, trying to figure out what the heck, you know, Paul is actually saying here. The King James.
You have to have a better translation. And
yeah,
takes,
this is horrible. This
it,
is a really horrible
thing. It takes a long time to sit and study the context in order to come up with the best possible translation.
Right, and I can imagine a lot of Christians read through this stuff and just throw their hands up and say, what in the world is this saying? You know, it's just hard to make sense out of this. And so you have to, and that's why, you know, I have turned to other translations, such as the Farrar Fenton, and several others who relate this language in much clearer fashion, and you can actually figure out what's being talked about here. Where the King James, when you were talking about abstruse language and figurative language, the King James simply just fails. It just fails. You know, it doesn't do a good job at all.
Well, no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Right.
That's why I made my translation. I mean, it's not the translation to end all translation.
Right, right.
But
yeah.
I think it's a hell of a lot better than
than
the King James or most of the others.
Yeah. So for these last two chapters, I think what I'll do is I'll pull out my Moffat translation because that's the one I found best to my liking. It's the most clear in rendering the Greek, okay, into modern English. Just far outshines the King James. So I may pick a couple of really cumbersome translations here from the KJV, and, you know, we can compare Moffat's translation and yours as well. So, you know, maybe we can do that for the final episode on 2 Corinthians, okay?
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting passages in Corinthians 12.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, very good. Thanks a lot, Pastor William Fink. We'll see you next Friday for another installment of the Gospel of John. And then we should conclude 2 Corinthians next Saturday. Tomorrow, folks, I'm going to be talking about telegony. Should be a very interesting show. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh and good night.